Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together. In the last four, almost 5 years of doing this show, I don't think that there's been a more requested guest. And we have her here today. But before we get into today's episode and guest plus somebody else, we actually have two guests on today's show. It is truly an incredible way for us to wrap up the year, because for the first time ever, I am actually going to take time off over the holidays. I have never done this on the show. So we are taking a holiday until the new year. And I'm really excited for what's going to come in the new year, because it's going to be really, really good. I just feel that in my bones. I think the show is going to be better than ever. And I'm excited for you to come meet us there when we get there. So thank you so much for all your support this last year. And like I said, today's most requested guest ever, with her cousin. If you haven't guessed it already, I have the cookbook authors, the best-selling authors, Jillian Harris and Tori Wesler on the show today. And I'm so excited because they have now brought out their second cookbook. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about why they got into doing cookbooks at all, especially with such booming businesses everywhere else, but also so many little things along the way I want to ask them about. And I'm so excited to. So please welcome to the show, Jillian Harris and Tori Wesler, aka Fresh Living. I am so excited for them to finally, after all this time, be on the damn show. Let's get it going. All right, it's happening. How many years have I had a podcast and you two have never been on? I feel like this is just a little Christmas treat for everybody.
Aw, happy holidays. I got rum and eggnog in here at 9 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
Just kidding. I wish I did. I've got really dry skin right now. And I asked my followers, yeah. I was like, what do I do? Like, my skin is so dry. They're like, maybe take it easy on the wine. I'm like, I haven't even had a glass of wine for like 2 weeks. I've been drinking lots of water.
Girl.
I
haven't had alcohol in a year and a half, and my whole scalp is like in a peel right now. I swear I have psoriasis now. There is like, I've been slathering my face in oil every night. Like, that's what I'm doing to keep, just to stay alive. It's so dry this year and we're on opposite sides of the country, but I don't have a drop of alcohol and that's not happening.
And I also don't.
Wine. It's all I have. It's all I have.
All right. Well, I'm stoked about this. You guys have been on a tour for this book for a little while. Now that things have sort of like settled in, how are you feeling about the success of your second book? Was it anticipated? Was it more than anticipated? I mean, I feel like the first one had so much buzz and the second one was like insanity.
Yeah.
I don't know if I anticipated anything. I was just really excited to do it. And I don't know if I had expectations, to be perfectly honest.
I was really analyzing this question as you were asking it. And I think the thing is that we're so lucky that it did do so well. We won bestseller, Globe and Mail bestseller, New York Times bestseller. Had they done badly, I think I would have been devastated. And so would you have. And I would have expected it to
That's
be better
so true.
Because so much time and energy, like I'm talking, I was going through it with Justin's best friend, Elliot, has just decided that he's moved in with us. I don't know what. So we have this very handsome, tall, dark. And
oh my gosh, this is a Christmas movie. Get a single woman, play the holiday.
Seriously. I've been trying, but I'm trying. He's very kind. He's very successful.
Okay. I'm the matchmaker now. This is great. Kids.
Anyways, he's moved in with us. And so last night we were going through the cookbook and he was just floored. He was like, wait, it takes you 3 to 4 years. He's like, why? And I had to tell him, well, we have to shoot the summer stuff in the summer because you can't get like cherries and peaches and like certain things are seasonal. And he was just blown away. And so I think that we take it for granted, maybe the success of it, because had it not done well, I think it would be crushing. You can kick our cookbook, but kiss your cookbooks. And because like they take a freaking army to make.
Oh God.
Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
And books in general. I mean, when I first learned that books took about 2 years to write, I think we live in a society, especially with social media, where we're so used to instantaneously consuming content and nobody really thinks about how long it took. We scroll through a social media feed and we see a 30-second video. And sometimes it took that person 30 seconds to make. And sometimes it took them 4 days or a year or like massive levels of production. And our brains are so in the now that we're just like double tap, go. Like we pick up a cookbook and we just look at it or we read a novel and we're done and you forget there is years of this, like of your time and energy and efforts put into that work. But not only that, the legacy of the recipes that have come through your family and your personal relationships that go into an individual piece of work. So I'm really glad that it's been so successful for you. And I mean, at the same time, I feel like because you were both so connected with your communities that they really showed up. I came to your book launch in Toronto and I thought it was a little quiet event. I thought it was a little tiny book signing and I walked in and I was like, oh my goodness. It was absolute mayhem to see how many people would show up just to be in the room with you all, have you sign their books. People don't just do that for cookbooks. They do that because they're connected to the author, because they're connected to the stories that the both of you have told. And you did so much of that with the first one. Why did you make the decision to make a second? And was it more or less intimidating to step back into the kitchen, especially during COVID and a pandemic?
First of all, this is really good for our Monday morning confidence. Like I could listen to Sarah talking and like, pumping our tires all day.
Oh yeah.
Why did we decide to do a second one? Well, Tori and our agent decided that we were going to do
it. Amazing.
Basically, but
you
bullied me into it, but tell her why you did that. I'm glad you did. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to do another one. I don't know. I just thought, I just think it's such a gift. When I was a kid, I just never, ever thought I'd listen to cookbooks. I would nerd out on them, like read them like novels. And never in my life did I think that I would get to have a cookbook, let alone a cookbook with my sister, best friend, like, and so it's a dream come true. And there was so much work. The first one, we did it, we closed the chapter on it. We're like, never again, we are never doing another cookbook. That just like took every ounce out of us. And then it's like childbirth, you kind of forget about how painful it was. The next offer came up and I was like, how do you say no to that? It's such a, every time we like, it's so different, you know, everything in social media or a blog, it feels so transient. It feels like, kind of like it's there and it hits a radar for someone. And then it kind of like disappears. Yeah. But a book has so much substance. Like that, book, you know, will hopefully be tattered and torn and splattered and earn a place on someone's shelf or in someone's kitchen for years. And like, that is so special. It's like such a legacy thing. And it's so different for me from anything that else that I create.
Totally. Elliot asked the same question. Listen, Elliot, hot Elliot, actually, he asked the kids to call him Uncle King Elliot. So Uncle King.
Oh,
Elliot.
Gosh, this guy is just building this resume right now.
So Uncle King Elliot last night was like, well, why would you do a second one? Because let's also be honest, the money is not like, this is why we're here. The money is not nothing like, but he's like, why would you do that? Like, it's something that your kids will have and hopefully they'll say, look at grandma's cookbook and they'll look at the pictures and they're in the cookbook. So it's like a little bit of a feather in your cap, so to speak, but nothing is better when you see people across the country and sometimes across the world, making your favorite recipes, your traditions, and now a piece of what makes you so happy is in their home. That's literally why I got into this business, is I just wanted to make people happy. And like, what an amazing way to do it. It's so cool.
It really is.
So yeah,
No, I just wanted to say, like, I think it's important because I remember, Tori, I actually met you in Toronto years ago and you had mentioned that like books weren't, you know, a big, weren't a big, like always a financial win, but it was a win in every other category. And that's why you do it. And I think there is such a dying art of legacy stuff, legacy media. We're seeing books sort of being, I don't know, like, are we... We're so holding on to things that are so a part of our upbringings and our lives. And I feel like we're in a time where people are kind of stepping back and going like, wait, I still love to read books and I love to watch movies and I love recipe blogs, but I still love having something in my hands the way that we always did it and something that I could pass on. It's just, there's something about it. And I think that it's really interesting watching even my kids grow up because I really anticipated that they wouldn't even interact with books, if I'm honest. I was like, how are they ever going to be inspired to read and to be a participant in those types of things when that's just not the way that they're interacting with culture anymore? And now I watch what happened was book talk. TikTok like channels that promote different books and you go into chapters now and they'd have a whole table of like the book talks and my kids are just devouring novels. And I'm like, this isn't going away. We're just in a time of just change. And you're right. Your blog, years ago, my original blog, the original Birds Papaya doesn't exist anymore because I forgot to renew the domain one day and it actually got bought by an adult website and I couldn't buy it back. It took me years and a lot of money to buy it back.
Oh, but so by then I had wiped, like, everything had been wiped and gone.
I know, everything had been wiped and gone. So you learn so quickly. And the same thing, like I lost my Instagram once by accidentally deleting it. And you learn very quickly, this is all very temporary in this world. What is something that you can own? What is something tangible that can be yours with your name on it? And like you said, Jill, your legacy, like these pieces of you that are actually, it's more than just temporary earnings. It's actually just the larger grand scale of value, right? So, but how, for me, if I'm thinking about writing a cookbook, I'd be like, all right, I have like a solid 10 recipes and then we'll build out from there. Having to do a second one, to be honest, sounds intimidating. It makes me already anxious. And you did this like years ago and I'm anxious. Like, how did you even go? Like, how are we going to do this again when we've already done the family recipes and all that stuff? Did you just sort of dig a little deeper? What was that process like?
It's actually crazy how, I'll let you expand on this, but I thought, how are we going to come up with another 100 recipes? Like, it's impossible. We already put
there's 100?
135.
Oh my gosh. I don't think I've ever counted.
Down and we just start chatting. Like, this wasn't the first one. That wasn't the first one. What about this? And like, for example, like I'm obsessed with ginger beef. I absolutely love it. And full disclosure, I try to go plant-based, but if I go out to a Chinese food restaurant with my parents, I'm ordering like the ginger beef. Like it's my
We try to
lean more plant forward. So I was like, is there a way that we could put this ginger beef in the recipe, but people could use beef if they want to, or they use, like, soy curls. And so like we started to think about things that we didn't put in the first one. And also the first one had a different theme. So once you start thinking about the different theme, then it sort of, it all of a sudden we had to cut out recipes. Like there's certain recipes that just didn't make it.
Yep.
Like, maybe they'll make it into the third.
Yeah, it's an intimidating process. We're no different. We started out probably with the same 10 recipes.
Yeah.
And then Jill and I sat down at her farm with a glass of wine and our laptops and just brainstormed. And yeah, you start to be like, oh, wait a second. Like Jill was like, I had this soba salad that I used to have. Yes. And you dig deeper. You're like, wait a second. And I remember, you know, every meeting that I went with my old boss that we would go and I'd always order this, like, want to recreate that.
Mm-hmm. And
I dare say that's probably better. That dressing is so good.
It's so good. Tarragon. Tarragon is
really,
tarragon does not get enough love.
Yeah.
Underrated herb. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's a lot of fun. And the fact that we get to do it together is really
good.
It made me so happy this year going to so many holiday craft shows and different events and seeing all of these incredible vendors who have been running their businesses for 10 years, 5 years, or maybe started last month. And here's something for you if that's something that you've ever thought about, being a maker or running your own business. Yes, I'm talking about Shopify. Because if you're thinking of selling something a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop era to the first real store era, all the way to we just hit a million orders era. Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, whenever and wherever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. And Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers. Listen to this. It has the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And right now, as a little encouragement to everyone just thinking about stepping into that dream, sign up for $1 per month trial at shopify.com/papaya, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/papaya now to grow your business or start your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/papaya.
Are you single and struggling with dating or in a long-term relationship and want to take that next step? Or maybe you've been together with your partner forever and you want to spice things up. We Met at Acme is a dating podcast for you, and I really hope you come check it out. I'm Lindsay Metzeler, and we have so much to talk about together. So check out We Met at Acme wherever you listen to podcasts, and I can't wait to meet you.
I mean, I feel like you must talk each other off the ledge a little bit too, because we all individually, I don't think at any level of success, and maybe you both can speak to this, there's still imposter syndrome and like so much self-doubt. Do you find that doing it together sort of helped you continue? Because I would feel, I've had a couple book deals and I always walk away from them because I just get really intimidated by the process and the fact that I feel like two things. I'm terrified to have anything permanent. And especially like when you're in such a state of evolving, you're just like, what if I say something and by the time this is out, I don't even feel that anymore. But then the second part is like, I would feel so much imposter syndrome. Like I was, this sounds like I'm name dropping. I'm not, I'm just using a reference, but Michael Bublé at the, he did a mall appearance in Toronto and he walked out. And I think he earnestly was saying this. He was like, I honestly didn't know if like only 11 people were going to show up today. And the mall was like front to back, just stacked for Michael Bublé at the shot of like seeing this man. Of course he sang a little song. And I thought it really doesn't end, does it? Like, does it ever really go away that you question if you're still relevant, if people are going to show up, if they're going to be there, if they're going to be excited, if they get it, if it's going to feel like what you meant to when you made it. How valuable was it for you to have each other to sort of push through some of those feelings? And did you have them at all?
Yeah, I think we also have an amazing team behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So as we create the recipes, like Tori and I also live like 2 minutes apart. So she would drop off a recipe at my place or I would drop a recipe off at her place. It's usually the first one more than the latter. But anyways, we would always pump each other up and be like, yes, this is amazing. Of course, be practical. Like, oh, I think you could use more of this, more of that. But if you're curious, there's actually two recipes in the book where we didn't have each other's back. And we actually went to war over it. And
doing recipes. Yeah. So extreme.
She was like, I invented this one with the goat cheese croquettes. I'm like, I did. I had this. She's like,
you didn't. Yeah,
you didn't.
You stole them off of my salad on the day of the photo shoot. You're like,
the war continues.
You know what this needs is goat cheese croquettes.
I don't remember that, but I had that recipe 30 years ago at 4th Street Rose in Calgary. It shouldn't be. The beet salad is old and it's outdated. Well, so is the grilled Caesar.
I served it the other night and it was like rave reviews.
But did you serve the grilled Caesar? Because if you put them side by side.
No, I didn't because it's winter and I'm not going to grill my salad.
And it was really funny because we really fought over it. Yeah. And we decided that these little croquettes, these little goat cheese croquettes, mm-hmm. I invented.
Clearly. Carry on. We need wine for this. Yeah.
Anyway, that they were going to live on both salads.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, we have
you shared it. That was how you settled the war. That was the white flag is that you just both got to use them.
We pitched actually doing sister salad wars, like as part of the book. We thought,
oh my God,
the publisher didn't agree.
Yeah. That's okay.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You can just see this on the podcast.
That's true.
Oh my gosh. So what is the recipe that has been, because I have a sneaking suspicion based on what I've seen, but what's been the recipe that's been the standout star of the book?
You know,
magic bread.
Yeah.
The magic dough bread. That's all I've been hearing about is the magic bread.
The magic dough. And it kind of was an accident how it was created. So
how is it an accident?
We were like, you know what? We love breads. So we started creating, you know, like a pizza. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was actually Shayna on our team was like, wait a second. She's like, you know, she's analyzing them. She's like, did you know that these recipes are actually all very similar? What if you could just create one? And I was like, I'm on it. Like, I love baking. And so we set out to like, just create this universal dough that you could memorize easily. Yeah. And it works beautifully for dinner buns, for cinnamon buns, for naan, for pizza. Like, it kind of can do everything. So yeah, it's been fun. I think it's fun also because it has a fun name.
Yeah.
And people often get so intimidated by baking.
Yeah.
But it's a recipe that you could pull off easily. And I thought it was so important. I know Jill did too, where you just want people to feel accomplished. You want people to be able to, oh, you know what? I can make this. Like, I've never made bread in my life. I can make this. And really, we're in the business of helping people feel accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And eating.
I have a bit of I hope it's not a spicy question. Maybe it is, but there's this new trend I've been seeing, especially around TikTok, about like just homesteading and people just like giving up in some forms it's very extreme. I'm speaking to the extreme form of it where you give up everything else and women are back into just like 1950s version of homesteading. These are just the ones I've come across. I'm sure there's ones that are a little bit more, whatever,
a little bit more balanced.
Attainable.
Yes. Like, yes. But this, I found it was interesting that people were getting really interested in starting to do things at home again. I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years and I didn't work outside the house. So recipes were truly a highlight of my day. Maybe making food was something that was sometimes a pain in the ass and sometimes, you know, important or exciting. But when I see trends like this, I feel really fascinated by the two of you because you sort of do a lot of the talking about cooking at home, making food at home, doing that, but you also run majorly successful businesses. Is that just something like, how often do you actually cooking at home? How important has it been for you? And how have you managed to, when you want to do it, make it that priority? Because I guess when I see the homesteading things, I'm like, I don't have 6 hours to watch bread to rise. I have 45 meetings to get to today. And I don't know how I'm going to do that and pick up the kids from school and have dinner on the table a certain time. It feels so unattainable. And then also I don't want to go. There was a time I would say right after Lemmy was born where we just like stopped cooking and we were spending so much money ordering in and it was just a slippery slope. Right. But like this, and so we're talking about things like legacy media and things like that, but I'm also like, how do we encourage a younger generation or even the generation now to cook in a ways that are attainable and ways that make them feel joy and make them feel happiness without it having to be all or nothing? You don't have to give up your careers. You don't have to do any of that. But also if that's what you're choosing to do, awesome, whatever makes you happy. How have you made that balance in your own lives with just sort of cooking at home and it not being an all or nothing and finding that balance and that joy in cooking when you can? And how often is that for you?
You go first. Cause I feel like I have a lot of thoughts.
I am allergic to all or nothing thinking. I think it can be so debilitating. And so I just think every day you kind of do your best. And I agree. I think it's wonderful. If someone wants to give up their job and go live on a homestead and have that life, I applaud them. I love it. I think it's so wholesome. I don't think it's the reality for most people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very motivated to find solutions that actually like fit people's lifestyle, including my own. And so I was hitting my head against the wall. I was like feeling the failure for years of like, and I'm a dietitian, but I was like, I can't get this. I would be like 6 o'clock. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like I haven't even nailed dinner. I'm like, we're like, I'm either trying to throw something together or we're dialing in. It's like, this can't, like, I work.
And Tori makes like dinners.
Yeah. I love cooking, but yeah. it was hard to fit it in.
Totally.
So that's, but I created a meal plan, like a subscription meal plan called Fresh Table for that. I'll use the cookbook a lot too. And it's just like, how can you plan ahead and you leverage all the tools that we have to make it easy and like not feel like you have to make a 3-course dinner every night. It doesn't have to be complicated, but there is a middle ground where people can still eat together as a family, which I'm very passionate mm-hmm. about. I think that we've kind of lost that art or that, yeah. that beauty and the connection, which is really what it's yeah. about. Like eating together without like, hey, you like grab Subway and like granted that happens some nights, but yeah. most yeah. of the time it'd be so wonderful if we could just a bit more, you know, eat together mm-hmm. and it doesn't yeah. have to be easy. But yeah. that, I think that's where the magic of happens.
It literally can be grilled cheese sandwiches and Campbell's tomato
totally.
Soup. And that's okay.
Yes.
Our cookbook is made for like everyday cooking, but let's be honest. Like I do order skip the dishes a lot, or I'm just like, hey, when Justin is like, I'm going to be at the farm all night. I'm like, yes, I can make macaroni and cheese for the kids.
Yes.
And I'll have their leftovers. And that'll be it. So don't get intimidated by the cookbook and thinking that we're like making our own sourdough, which I'm doing actually right now, or like bread or magic buns every single day.
Yeah.
Oftentimes the times that we are doing it every day, full transparency, you can correct me if I'm wrong about you, but like Tori has a team of people that are here at her house every single day that are like prepping and cooking and whatnot. So sometimes she has the support of like something prepped or something like that's kind of already done. I have I'm not a live-in nanny, but a full-time nanny. Mm-hmm. And now that the kids are at school full-time, I can get her to get run and get groceries
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
Or prep
yeah.
something. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yes.
It is easy. It's usually because I have help. But if I didn't have Melissa, all the days, like you said, like you're allergic to the black and white mentality. I think I just always ask myself, what is the lesser of the evils right now? And it's like some days I just don't have it in me. I just don't have it in me. And I order in or I do grilled cheese and tomato soup or macaroni and cheese and eat the crust, whatever it is. But has anybody, have you watched Live to 100 on Netflix?
Yeah. No. I know the concept. Zones.
And yeah. And but basically it's a no brainer. It's just all about like community, making your own food,
building
your
farm own food, to table, dancing,
singing,
yeah.
getting exercise, like super, super simple stuff. And so what I found is that all of a sudden, if I'm like, I'm going to treat myself, I'm going to order skip the dishes 5 days a week. All of a sudden I don't feel as great. I don't feel as awesome.
For sure.
Like, everything's starting to pile up. I don't feel that. So I'm like, okay, I need. So I do think like in response to this Tori's meal plan, or just sit down with a cookbook. Like I have a time block every Sunday that I sit down with a cookbook and I'm like, okay, just try to at least envision 2 or 3 meals this week. And usually one of them is like a taco meal. One of them is this, a soup meal. There's a lot of great, like little biscuits and things like that, that are in the cookbook that you can make ahead and they can last you all week. And so I just try to do that so that I know at least maybe less than half or half of the meals, I have it in my head. I know what I need to get for groceries and it's just there. And sometimes whether I have Melissa or I'm on my own, if I'm in between meetings or it's towards the end of the day, or if I can, then I'll chop some stuff up and I'll try to get it ready. But there are families, many that are probably listening to this, where both families do not come home until 5:30 at night.
Yeah.
And they're coming home. Their kids are still young. And so if you're coming home, if your office hours are 9 to 5 and you come home by the time you commute and it's 5:30 or you get off your last call, it's 5:30, that's dinner time.
That's dinner. That's open dinner time. I know.
But this is prepping. A constant. Then are you making the chili? So I don't know. I've been working from home ever since I quit Love It or List It. Mm-hmm. And so I try to pre-prep stuff during the day. But if you don't, how are you doing it? Like, how are your customers doing it? Are they doing it at night?
A lot of people love crock pots, or we have with
fresh. Yeah, crock pots are great.
So we have a bit of prep. So it's like
the night before
on Sundays, there's like a couple of things. It just makes the whole week go a lot
smoother.
The biggest thing too, is just having the groceries in the house.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Totally. Right. Like if you were to have an impromptu dinner, you're like, oh, I'm just going to throw together.
Tacos.
Oh, amazing. I'm missing half the ingredients. Like,
Yeah. I remember actually, as you said that, I used to, when I was a single mom and I was just working out of the house for the first time. Obviously you also don't have the finances. There wasn't even like order and services at that point. It was like you're ordering and paying for delivery. You're going and picking up, just wasn't accessible. Crockpots were everything. They were like, set it up in the morning and you go, or simple things like naan bread pizza, things that were like, literally just have the ingredients in your fridge and be ready to go and make everybody happy as quickly as you can. Or we would do, when I met Shane, I remember loving, he would do this thing called fridge soup.
And you'd go through the fridge and anything you had leftovers of or things that were about to be wilted and done, he would make a soup out of it. And it would be like whatever those common flavors are, that's what the theme is. It's going to be a little bit more Asian infused, or it's going to be a little bit more of like a stew. And he would do this like leftover soup thing. And
I have a recipe, very first recipe ever posted.
Yeah.
It's called garbage pasta.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Like all of the things in the fridge that we're going to go. I just made a pasta sauce out of them.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. A little while ago, we did this dinner and I was like, oh, I really want to make a lasagna. But every single time we make lasagna, it's like, I don't know, you're already doing all the work. And I'm like, why don't we just have the neighbors over? And they brought the sides and I made the lasagna and we all sat down to dinner. And I looked and I was like, oh my gosh, we're actually, we normally eat dinner just around the island or just in front of the TV. Like we might eat together. Everyone's schedules, like it's a mini miracle. Once your kids get to be teenagers, it's a mini miracle that you're all in the house at the same time. It's so rare. They have jobs, they have stuff going on. And there's these like little pockets of windows that you have to like slip through. But I don't want the chaos of life to have us miss out on some of these things, because I used to take so much pride in cooking. And I think there was this part of me that like really lost that, getting overwhelmed and really picking it back up again is kind of healing, because you realize that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You're not a failure if you know you have non bread pizzas 3 nights in a row and then you make a beautiful lasagna dinner one day. But I made me think more about how we can sort of create those access points for people, especially in that communal thing, because you guys do this so much where you have, you know, communal meals where your families come together. And I think if people had more conversations with their friends and neighbors about that, we'd all be in such a better place, because we'd be like, okay, you bring this, I do this, and we all have less to do, but we're all eating and we're all sitting down and we're creating these experiences together. Or just like you said, Tori, like finding those pockets of what actually works, what's accessible. If you can set up a crock pot in the morning and do a slow cook and come home to something, and maybe you made that dough and you can put something in the oven right before. There's so many points where you can pull things together. And I remember I had a recipe chef on not long ago, and he said that the biggest thing that he found was that people were just getting so overwhelmed by prep. And so he was big on just prep everything. If you have time, prep it in the morning, prep it the day before, prep it after dinner, what's for the next day, do all your chopping then. And then the next day you're literally just throwing it together and cooking. And it cuts the amount of time and pressure so drastically. And I thought that that was a really interesting take as well. So I think what you're doing overall, because I think anybody watching sees that you live such busy lives, but you still have, and even with help, you make an effort to, you know, create these recipes and bring that legacy of your families forward into cooking again. It's inspiring for someone like me, even though it's like, can be intimidating. I used to actually be a food editor. So like recipes were my whole world for a while, and they're not nothing to pull together. They're a lot of work. I used to be a very small team and we would do these like tasty style videos where you'd have to make videos of it all. And the whole process, it would take an entire day for like one recipe. So how did you guys actually shoot this? How long did it take to make how many recipes would you get done in a day? Because 130 something recipes, that blows my mind.
Around 15-ish.
Yeah, 15 okay. A day. And our shoots
was a messy day, I bet.
Oh my God, so messy. Yeah. Going back to the pressure of cooking, one other thing I want to say is I do want to toot my own horn on our cookbook a little bit, because we were cooking it. Our first cookbook, you were well into motherhood, but I only had one baby and I had more time for whatever reason with Leo. I don't think my business had grown as much as it has now. But the second cookbook, I remember us both being like, I was like, okay, wait a second. Why are we frying this? Like, we should be baking this. Like, I don't have time to stand there and fry something. I just want to put it in the oven. Or I would be like, wait, why are we chopping up all these veggies? We're just going to blend them anyways. Let's just throw them in there. So like in this cookbook, we're trying to think like, what steps can we take out? How can we make this easier? Because when we created this second cookbook, we were both drowning in business, drowning in kids. And I'm like, we would ask ourselves, would you fucking make that? Pardon my language. I'm not fucking
love
that. There's no way. I'm not making that. No. Like, okay, well, so how can we, there's certain things that are a bit tedious, like the pot stickers that are worth it. Like there's certain things that are worth it, but the pot stickers you're not whipping together on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
Pot stickers are like, oh, we're going to entertain on the weekend. I'm going to make these in advance. I'm going to do this on a Saturday morning. It's kind of like a little bit cathartic, you know, doing that. But anyways, most of it like the broccoli cheddar soup, the seafood chowder is so unreal. That was also Shayna, I think.
Yep.
I was like, unbelievable. It's dairy-free, by the way.
What?
Gluten-free.
Oh, yeah.
And it's creamiest chowder. You would never believe it is dairy-free. And it is one pot. And it's like one of those things, like, you know, when you're like, okay, shit, we're having neighbor Becky over for dinner. I know she doesn't judge, but you're having her and you want to do something special. It's her birthday. Hopefully she eats seafood. You're out east. Anyways, it is one of those things that everybody's like, you made this? This is amazing. And it's one pot. It's only a few ingredients. It's very, very simple. Blow your mind. And then we have these cheddar pull apart biscuits, which, by the way, I made gluten-free. I'm freaking gluten-free. Yeah, they're
and it worked.
It was the.
Did you use the Bob's one for one?
Yes.
It was okay.
It was the best. I almost liked them better than the gluten ones.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Oh my gosh.
Sometimes it works. If it's a denser type of thing, then it works. It's like, I just haven't had like a fluffy, crusty baguette in so long. That's why or a sourdough, I would freaking die for something like that. But in the right context, gluten-free can taste better.
I absolutely agree.
One thing about the cookbook is that for anybody that's listening right now that has a family with lots of dietary restrictions, every single recipe at the very top, it will say whether you can modify it to be gluten-free, nut-free, dairy-free. It might already be vegan. So really, really good with families with dietary restrictions. We did 15 recipes a day over the course of a year.
Yep.
It literally took us 12 months to shoot the whole cookbook.
But we also had very high standards, which I really loved.
Yeah.
So we like, to Jill's point, we were like, every single recipe, well, how can we simplify it the easiest way possible? And then like, how can we use ingredients also that you can find easily in a grocery store? Because no one has the time to be hunting around to five different places to find some really wild, obscure ingredients to put into an everyday meal. So it's really easy to source ingredients, super easy to make.
And reuse, like for example, like the cheddar broccoli soup, which also is vegan. We use like every, even like the base of the broccoli, like use everything, or the risotto balls are leftovers from the actual risotto.
That's right.
Or our smoothie popsicles. If you have extra smoothie, you just pop them into a popsicle
mold. Yeah. Baked apples. You throw those into a blender. The nice sounds. If you should, you have leftovers, which is unlikely, but you throw these beautiful baked apples filled with oats and brown sugar and whatnot into a blender and put some dairy-free milk or whatever milk you like, a little bit of ice, and voila, you have like this incredible smoothie that tastes like an apple.
Totally.
I love that.
What about if you actually were done with those apples, if you just chop them up, threw them into a Tupperware and then put them in the freezer?
Yeah.
And then the
that's a great idea.
Look at recipe book number three coming right up.
I have to say, one thing that made me really proud of you both was, I'm sure there's a lot of debating, and maybe this is like over your heads type of debating, but the cost of the book. And I was like really so impressed that it was such an accessible price point. And then when I walked in, like, it's so funny to me. I'm so glad I've actually met you both in person, so it's less creepy. But like, I was like in a Costco and I was like, oh my God, that's my friend's cookbook. Like, it's so cool to see you guys like out there and it being such a good price for somebody to treat themselves. Or I'm sure it's going to be a very, very big holiday ask this year. I know it was something that my mom was like, oh, I want that. But I just think it's so nice because it doesn't really have an age stamp on it. It doesn't really have... It's just, these are things that are tried and true with a spice anew. Wow. That was a tagline.
Writing it down.
Just came right up with that. No problem.
Yeah. But like, it really is accessible recipe wise. It's adaptable. It can fit into your lifestyle no matter what it is. And the price point was truly, I was like, you guys probably could have priced that at way higher and people still would have bought it. But the fact that you were like, more people will be able to have this forever if we priced it a little bit more reasonably, I thought that was just it was just really cool to see, to be honest. It was a very good price point. And I know I'm not naming the price because it's different
everywhere. And I don't want to call anybody out
right now because this airs December 11th. So yes. So typically the book would full retail and after Christmas will be $40, $45. But because we launched right around like October, October, and then we're going to the holidays, most bookstores have to compete with, you know, they were. And so it's actually $27 right now at Indigo Books and also at $24.99 at Amazon.
Oh my gosh.
50% off. And that's not a reflection of how well it's doing. It's just because these guys.
It actually is.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So the books went with bestseller books.
The better it sells, the cheaper it is.
Go figure.
What?
Yeah. I was like, why? I'm like, it's a bestseller. Why are they discounting it? And they're like, that's just how the book industry works.
Oh, that is so interesting. I had no idea. I just thought it was awesome. And I thought even at $40 or $45, I mean, it's a big ass book. We pay that for lots of books. You can't even go to the thrift store anymore and get a book for a reasonable price.
I was looking the other day.
For anybody that is really a fan, or like, let's say you have a big foodie in your life.
Yeah.
Or somebody's just moved into a new house, or you've got newlyweds and you're like, what do I get these people that is truly unique and also supports small Canadian brands? Tori and I launched the Fresh Food Fuller Hearts box in the fall as well. So what I love about this is you get the cookbook. You can choose to also get it signed, which is really special because a lot of people want their cookbook signed. And then you get this apron that we designed with the Cross Home Decor, which is like the most beautiful store in the entire world. It's on the West Coast here. So you get this exclusive apron, the oven mitts, which I feel like I go through oven mitts like crazy. Like I don't.
Oh, me too.
Anyways, oven mitts, this cookbook stand that is made from Canadian wood, handmade right in Canada. And then this gorgeous little French plaque sign that says Bon Appetit from one of our other favorite brands, that's LGBTQ and family owned. And then you also get this cute little art print. So you get like this little bundle. It comes all pretty. It's almost like you don't even need to wrap
it
on it. And that's through the Jilly box. So we launched that.
Okay.
We
really
love that. If you're thinking like, oh, this person's going to love the cookbook, but you want to do more. Like, you know, you buy a cookbook.
Totally. You try to make a bigger present.
The Fresh Food Fuller Hearts is.
Okay. You know what? Your team sent me this box. I'm going to unbox it on the day that this launches. So people can actually, if you're listening, go check out my Instagram stories and I will do an unboxing of everything that's inside, because you're right. It's a big ask for a lot of people who are wanting like in on that, or just big fans of yours, because honestly, even if they already have the cookbook, then they can gift that to somebody else. That's the really, really special thing about books, and especially recipe books, is that they are not, it's, you might hold on to it for 30 years, but you might have one and you buy a second one for a friend or you pass it along. They're meant to be community tools. They are not meant always to just sit there collecting dust. They're meant to be, yeah, something you can share. So if you end up getting the box and you already have the book, that's a great way for you to sort of re-gift that part of it, which is really, really neat. I think what you have done is absolutely amazing. I think both of you, in the way that you have so worked so hard on this, Canada is so proud of you, our little princesses of the nation. But it's been really cool to see. I know how much you guys have worked, because I saw how many flights you took all across Canada at these book launches and how much heart and passion. And I know how much convincing it takes.
I still don't have the Air Canada status that I was hoping for.
No, I will tell you how, you know what? You know what? I had to do a life hack. I had to get the Amex. I had to do the Amex card that gets all the points.
Right.
And now I'm doing a little bit better on earning for status. But I
don't think anybody has flown as much as me this year. And I still don't have the status. I think I got lounge access. That's it.
Oh, I literally DM'd somebody and I was like, I'm sorry, how are you flying with your children in these like little pods across the world? And I'm just like in the back of a plane flying every 6 weeks. And I'm like, I'm fine with that. But like, it just feels like I'm missing something here, because why am I not getting the points?
Did they say Amex?
And it's this one Amex. So I'll send you the thing. I run my, like, all our business expenses that I can through the Amex, and it helps earn
not
these
Amex,
points.
But willing to be sponsored by Amex.
Willing. Yes. Ready and willing. But it also is connected to like multiple other apps. So we're earning points in like other, like, I think you can do that with Aeroplan regardless.
Ordering it right now.
Not the way to get the points. Flying was not the way.
My arm to get another credit card.
No, I've been shocked. I fly so much, and I was like, why am I not even at 25K status? And I hit 25K within the first month of me having this card, hit 35K from the second month of having the card. And I was like, okay, this is how people are doing it. Now I get it. But I'll let you know when I get to 50K. That's the goal. Well, thank you both so much. Give a final plug of where everyone can find you, find the books, find the box, and let's sign it off.
Yeah. So local bookstores, we always say local bookstores first.
Amazing.
Because they support the small guys. So if you have a little bookstore, they very likely carry it. If you're in a pinch, of course, Amazon and Indigo are always a great way to go. And then if you want to get something a little bit juicier, let's say the Fresh Food Fuller Hearts box can be found on jillybox.com.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Thank you both so much. I know it's an early Monday morning for you. I'm so excited. Everyone, when I started this podcast, I was like, it's been 4 years of people asking to do a podcast. And so I'm so excited that we're doing it. I feel like it's very special, great timing, great way to wrap up the year. So thank you both so much in your busy schedules. And yeah, let me know when you come up with a gluten-free magic bread and I'm ready to go.
But I'm going to make those cheese bones.
Get on it.
On it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm ready. Thank you both so much.
Pull apart bread.
Okay. I'm going to do it.
Also, one last thing. A lot of the recipes in the book are kind of like 80s, 90s inspired, like from our childhood.
Oh, so I love it.
Pull apart bread. If you make it, you're like, wait a second. Did I not have these at Red Lobster in like 1995? They're very Red Lobster inspired.
I freaking love that. That was my favorite restaurant growing up. I still go there nostalgically sometimes. It's the best. I love that. I think that's nice to be in touch with your roots, even if you were a 90s kid and we grew up on some really weird foods. So I think that's awesome. Thank you both so much. And for everyone listening, I'll have everything in the show notes for you as well. And like I said, I'll do the unboxing and stories today. And we will see you in the new year. Bye.
Love you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening all the way through this episode. If you've made it this far, I have one more little thing to share with you. Did you know that I actually have a photo and video editing app? So many people were surprised to hear that I have one, but it's actually been around for a little while and you can join over 200,000 of the Papaya community by downloading my free app, Pink Papaya on iOS. While so many apps focus on changing your appearance, Pink Papaya is all about celebrating yourself for exactly who you are and expressing your creativity and your storytelling with nearly 50 free filters and tools. Find us on social and share your edits as well. We might just share them too. So tag me as well at Pink Papaya app. Just had to share that with you, especially as the springtime's coming. We've got some really cool things happening in there and so much more coming. Check it out at Pink Papaya app. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day. Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of the Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.